C1SP. Chapter 4. Christian Science versus Spiritualism. The structure of the Christian Science textbook, Our Way of Life. Number 1A.
We have considered the last subject of marriage, and I always like to have a good overall picture of a chapter. You see, I think we have to see that the last subjects bring the solution to the subject of marriage. In the fifth subject, just to recapitulate the last three ones, in the fifth subject, we had the presentation of the necessity to improve the mortal species, and there was shown the method of doing so through ascendancy of the good over the evil, the ascendancy of the spiritual over the animal, through a pure, rarefied mental attitude. And actually, this subject applies not only to the propagation of mortals, but also to the education of people. Therefore, the relation of man to man, the relation of practitioner to patient, the relation of teacher to student, it's always a question that how can I be the father to the other one? Life is always the fatherhood. Here it is the fatherhood which is expressed from one person to the other in educating and lifting up the student. Then, in truth, in the sixth subject, we could see the Christ method of how to resurrect this manhood to a higher sense of humanhood. The method of resurrecting through the Christ truth and turning the water into wine. But then, in the last subject, we have even a higher step, a step that goes higher, namely the humanhood giving way now to spiritual manhood. It's in the seventh subject that spiritual, the term spiritual, the tone of spiritual comes into focus. And so it is the method how the humanhood is giving way by step experience to the spiritual manhood. And so, as a whole, marriage really gives us the way how to free ourselves from the womb of mortality. Every one of us, every student who reads the textbook, has come out of the womb of mortality. We can't deny that. We can be absolutists, but we can't deny that we have come out of the womb of mortality, and that there is a method and a way how to get out of that womb of mortality and be clothed in the womb of immortality. The last tone of love, therefore, shows us how love enforces this coming out of the womb of mortality into the womb of immortality. How love has a plan which does not want to immortalize the human. The human mind would like to immortalize a human state. It would like first to make the human harmonious and then to immortalize it, to prolong it and to give it permanency. Love has another tendency. Love has the tendency to take us out of the human state of being and drive us. Love wants to drive us and to accept man's real status, its spiritual status. And so we get in that last subject, those terms which gives the tone of that forcing. She says, the human mind will at length demands a higher affection. You see, it's not, it's a force behind it. Their will ensure a fermentation. Marriage will become purer as the scum is gone. The understanding of truth will be the basis of true religion. Man's coexistence with God will appear. The child will ask his parents, do you keep the first commandment? You see, she gives the tone of that forcible nature of love. That's a fact in the universe, in reality, which nobody can escape. That love forces us to show us that even a good human situation, a happy human situation, is not the ultimate. That love forces us through circumstances, through the method either of science or the method of suffering, trial, sorrow, that it forces us through those methods to reach out for the spiritual ultimate. So we get a feeling that the purpose of this chapter is not to improve that which by its own nature is insufficient, but to ask us to let go of the transient, of the insufficient, of the unsatisfactory, and to adhere and reach out for the spiritual. For the spiritual, which is no more transient. So often, when there is something disharmonious in a relationship, one turns to this chapter on marriage. And that's all right, but one must be clear that even then, one must regard any problem of relationship within the framework of the whole chapter. Because one always will find here or there a sentence or a statement in that chapter which will suit our purpose. And in a relationship, in a human relationship, which seems to be one of the most difficult problems really to solve, because the human is insufficient by definition, and so human relationships always bring up difficulties, and so always present very difficult situations, then it is necessary not just to turn to one or to the other sentence and to prove one's position right or so, but that one considers every problem of relationship always within the framework of the whole chapter. I feel that's necessary to point out, because it isn't a question who is right and who is wrong. But it's always a question, what is right and what is wrong? And also it is a question, on which state of development does a situation arise? You see, as long as one considers usually a situation within the first five subjects, there, within those five subjects, Mrs. Eddy tries to give us the signs of a happy human relationship and shows how to happify existence on this human plane. But considered, for instance, then in a further advanced stage like the sixth and seventh subject, one begins to see that a happy relationship or an unhappy relationship, she speaks of both, but an unhappy relationship may be just a fermentation and a chemicalization of a higher plane which is at work. And that something higher is at work bringing to the surface certain aspects of human life and of human relationship which needs to be corrected on a much higher plane and for a much higher purpose. A student wrote me a letter and pointed out that very clearly that student wrote and said it seems to be a chapter which anyone can interpret as he wants when it is taken out of its order. Well, that's I think the danger of this chapter. Just the danger as just on the Bible, you can prove any position through the Bible. One can do anything and say, well, in the Bible it is written. But if one takes the Bible in its coherent context, in its structure, then it's different. And so it is with the textbook and certainly with this chapter. So this student has seen that quite clear, that if one takes it out of its context, one can prove everything. But that student goes on and says, but in the order, there is only one interpretation. So it's perhaps necessary to remind oneself of this and to see that this chapter on marriage is presenting a vast range in one's own life and in one's own spiritual development, and that it always depends on what point of progress and development one is in order to see a proposition right. Looking at this chapter on marriage in its position within the whole textbook, it is the third chapter illustrating the word as Christianity. And it looks as if it is, if it has a lot of similarity with the Beatitudes. We remember that Mr. Dawley gave us four big Bible teachings in the word order, namely the days of creation, the commandments, the Beatitudes, and the Lord's Prayer. And we have seen that these four big presentations of the word have always a bit of different touch. Just as in the days of creation give the word order in its tone of seeking, whereas the commandments give the word order in its tone of the word as the Christ, namely the demands which that seeking puts before the seeker. And so the commandments which demand from the seeker something, and it's some similarity with the atonement Eucharist. And when we come to the Beatitudes, there again we get that word sense more from the standpoint of the word as Christianity, namely from the beatified attitude, and shows what effect a beatifying attitude can have on the world. See, in the Beatitude one has always a statement of the cause and its effect. The cause as a blessed attitude. Blessed are those and those. For they shall inherit, for they shall get, for theirs is. You see, one always gets a response, always an effect of this blessed attitude. Now, the same is true in this third chapter on marriage. It has a lot to do with those seven Beatitudes. I don't have the time to go through it, but perhaps you think it over. But one thing is important to see, that it gives always that sense that if we fulfill a standpoint, a blessed standpoint, a beatifying standpoint, that which will always have a response, that will always have a reward. And I want to go quickly through the seventh subject in this light, showing how, if we come to that standpoint of whereas Christianity, the marriage standpoint, how that, in the measure as we bring out within us a higher sense of manhood, a higher sense of humanhood, better qualities, an adherence to better qualities, a reflection of better qualities, how that is always doing a blessed work, a work that blesses the universe, that we begin to contribute something to the whole world. Just as the Beatitudes tell that, you see, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs the kingdom of heaven. You see, they have a reward for that. It broadens out their whole standpoint. Let me go quickly through those seven subjects with the aim to see what man's contribution to a higher humanity is. Man's contribution at the point of marriage, that is, at the point where first we have approached God as He is, where we were willing to approach and to seek God as He is, and have through atonement and Eucharist been willing to atone, to unite with all that what God as He is, and to be willing to sacrifice and let go of all that which is unlike God. That is, at that point where something in us begins to be born as a new manhood, then we become a factor in the universe. We become a contributing factor in the universe. That's Christianity. You see, we begin to be a contributing factor in the universe. In the first subject, we see that in the measure as I become one with mind through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, in that measure mind brings out in me, I always thought now that it brings out something in me and that contributes something to the universe. It brings out in me that which is respectful for law, that which is law-abiding and lawful. And that quality, that blessed standpoint, helps and makes a contribution to the universe. It contributes towards a lawful society. And so I become really a molding influence in the universe. See, now I come to Christ. You can now hear the touch why this chapter has to do with Christianity, the word as Christianity, where I become a molding influence in the universe. I begin to stabilize civilization and so on. The second, as I become one with mind through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, as I become one with spirit through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, that brings out in me really what Mrs. Eddy there shows, that radiation of pure affection, of spiritual qualities blending and blending. The more pure, the more I have atoned with spirit, the more pure, the purer I become, and the purer I am, the more qualities can blend and blend and blend. The calculus of spiritual qualities becomes real in me. And so I become really a contributing factor towards the completeness of manhood, towards the purity of the universe, I contribute something as a purifying factor in the universe. It doesn't stay with me. Or the third, she shows that as I become one with soul through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, that I become one with soul, the more a sense of selflessness is brought out to me, a sense of what she shows there, of altruism is brought out in me, of a unity of interests in the universe is brought out in me. And through that attitude, I begin to contribute something to the universe. And she says what such an attitude contributes is that I help to stabilize, secure, and joy and happiness in the world. See, the more the selflessness in me awakes, the more I become a contributing factor for the happiness and joy in the universe. I hope I do. Then the fourth, she shows the more I become one with principle through that principled attitude of prayer and that willingness to let go of all doctrine and theories and so on in atonement and Eucharist, I become more and more scientific in my attitude, basic, fundamental, and not personal in my attitude. That's a blessed state of being. And that blessed state of being contributes to the whole universe. In that way, I contribute really to establishing relationships in companionship and partnership which are more permanent, which are entertaining higher and more impersonal and more permanent relationships. Actually, the more impersonal, more principled we become, the more relationships are free from friction, from misunderstanding, and so on. And so I become a contributing factor for the universe. Take the fifth subject. What does she say there? That in the measure as through prayer and atonement and Eucharist I become one with life, the life factors are brought out in me. The exalted thought is taking form in me more and more. I have more and more that sense of ascending and trying to rise higher and higher in my thought and attitude and mentality. So that brings out in me a more refined qualities, a more ascended, exalted qualities in me, and in that way, that becomes a contribution to the universe. I become really a factor in a molding and influencing factor in the universe with the tendency of advancing, promoting, culturing, and improving the human species. The more that fatherhood sense is awakened in me, a true fatherhood sense is awakened in me through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, the more I am eager to help everybody, to strengthen everybody, to support everybody, to help to advance anybody, to improve a situation, to be there as a father always providing and providing and providing the best he knows and can and does. So I become a father to the universe. That's wonderful. We shouldn't just be a father to one or two people. It's so small. It's not man. Man is enormously big. It's not right always to claim for oneself that man is universal and is spiritual and then always be concerned with tiny little things and to restrict oneself to a narrow circle and to a narrow occupation and so on. It's going against oneself. We go against one's own nature if one doesn't allow that manhood in us to express itself, which is manhood. So we come to the sixth subject. And there I begin to see that the more I become one with truth, through that approach in prayer to truth, through that being willing to let go everything which is unlike God and men in Atonement and Eucharist, in that measure, naturally, more and more, the true sense of man is brought out in me. The more and more I begin to be a representative of the true man on this human plane, in spite of the human, on this human plane. And as I do that, as I begin to, as in that measure, as something in me of a higher sense of manhood is being brought out, I also begin to contribute, really, to the elevation of society in general. Because the moment a higher sense of manhood is born in me, I can no more support laws and regulations and an attitude and things which depreciate manhood. I just can't anymore. I just become an influencing, contributing, molding factor in the universe which does everything to raise the standard of manhood, to contribute to a more equalized sense of humanhood. And so I become a factor in the universe, each one of us. And let's go to the last subject of love, where we begin to see that as I become one with love, or in the measure as I become one with love, by that prayer of trustfulness in the chapter on prayer, by that willingness to let God's plan be worked out and not my plan be worked out in Atonement and Eucharist, in that measure, love brings out in me really the willingness to adhere no more so much to me than to God. Brings out in me a sense that I must always adhere to the plan of love. And that makes me to contribute quite generally in the world. I give thereby an example, I give thereby the inspiration to the world that what men should do is to turn to God. That's the last subject, which shows there must be a more spiritual adherence. Mankind must finally ask, is God the creator or is he not? Or is man a creator? So, in the way, in the measure that I go the way, I help the world to go the way. See, that's the Beatitude statement. The Beatitudes always say, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. In the measure as I make peace, in that measure the world accepts me as the peacemaker, as the children of God. It awakens in the world an acknowledgement of what is going on. And so, though the whole chapter on marriage is focused on the individual and his effort of the individual to go the way from out of the human into the spiritual, we must see that this individual is always universal and therefore has always a blessed influence on the world. Now here we stand, you see, and I feel we must sometimes hold and just sit back and just stand in awe to what really man is and to what really our understanding and our efforts and our love to understand science, the science of God, is doing and can do for the whole world. Because only then we really get new inspiration and new impetus to go on. We feel newly fed, so to say, by the desire to go on. And as we go on. That's just silly, huh? I think it's just silly that when I want to say something nice, that my voice wouldn't work.